Kia ora koutou, and welcome to another episode of South Pacific Muscle. Myself, Nate, my man Mike Tabb, and joined today by Frank Carroll. Frank, how are you?
Good, thanks. Good.
Looking large and in charge there, bro.
Oh, we work for it every day, eh? We're trying, man.
You're off season at the moment, man?
Yeah.
Cool. Because you kind of came off quite a big year last year competing, right?
I'd done the one show last year. It was just a tough show to get to. And I competed the year before that. And last year it didn't go to plan for me, just in terms of just the whole year.
Yeah, it was a mess, man. The year was a mess for everyone, eh? It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it really was just sort of like I just had to do the show to get shit back on track. And I knew that I wasn't going to be going to achieve what I ultimately set out to at the start of the year. But yeah, we had my dad got cancer at the start of the year, got diagnosed at the start of that year. So basically I just put everything else on hold to go down there and help him. Yeah.
Cool, man. Like, you know, you have to with stuff like that, you know, I mean, we all kind of get stuck in that headspace and life's all about bodybuilding, but you know, at the end of the day, when you know, take a look at it, you know, it's people that matter. So,
bodybuilding's always there.
What's the prognosis? How's dad now?
He's doing all right, man, but he's stage 4 mastitis, his liver, bowel and spine, and he's battling away. He's actually on paper, he's not doing well at all, but if you were to see him, he's actually in better condition than what it was when we first found out. So we're just sort of calling it miraculous time.
Yeah, making the most of every day, bro, and I hope you're spending as much time as possible, bro, because, you know.
Yeah,
it's one of those things, a horrible thing to go through, but you know, it is what it is, unfortunately. So,
yeah,
right. So, for those that don't know you, Frank, do you want to give us a bit of a rundown about your early days and where you grew up and what sort of sports and things you're into, and then how you found your way into bodybuilding?
Yeah, sweet. So we were from Taupo originally. We moved to Whangarei when I was 10. In that time there, I started boxing first, was my first sport. I started doing that when I was about 5. And I used to get up every morning and do push-ups with the old man before he'd go to work. And when we moved to Whangarei, I was 10. I continued just doing just rugby and soccer and stuff like that. I think I was 13 and I got some weights for Christmas. And dad got some home setup stuff as well. So that basically was when I started weight training. And then that just, man, led one thing into another. As soon as I was old enough to be in a gym, I joined up the gym, had to go with dad as well, but we'd actually moved to New Plymouth by that stage. So I was, going to the gym was my main focus, but also still playing rugby and soccer and stuff as well. Got back into boxing. I think pretty much as soon as I was old enough to go to the gym by myself, that was it. That was what I decided to do. So I think I was 16, and that was just me. I'd wag school to go to the gym.
Good stuff, bro. That's fucking awesome. I love hearing that. Interesting that, you know, your father had such an influence on you in those young years in terms of physical fitness and training and boxing, etc.
Yeah, he was always into training hard out, and he is always quite strong and quite well built. He didn't compete or anything, but he did, like, way back in his younger days, he done like a, it was just sort of like a, it was a, not a bodybuilding competition, but just like a show.
Yep.
There was no prizes or nothing like that, but he was in good nick. Someone told him to jump on stage, so he did. And he always loved training, and so naturally,
I got
him as well. And
oh, cool. That's really awesome. I saw, talking about things like that, I saw a photo today of John De La Rosa and his father. I think it's William De La Rosa. And holy heck, you can see where John De La Rosa got it. Those two are, I actually thought it was a picture of John De La Rosa at his age, but it was his old man. So that was interesting. And obviously you got Hunter and Sergio who are sort of following in the footsteps. So that's cool. A really cool story.
It is cool. I've definitely taken more of the bodybuilding route. Dad was more just to stay fit and stay strong. And but I, I like this and I pushed into it. And
yeah. When did you first manage to get yourself on stage?
I was 17. I'd done a INBA show. I actually got coached by Chris Henderson. I don't know if you know him, but him and his wife that owned the gym in Taupo.
Yep.
So I was back in Taupo then. Yeah. So we moved around a bit, and that was when I started competing. I think I competed at 17, 18, took a year off. 20, 21, took some more time off. And
yeah, I was doing an Instagram stalk this afternoon, and I was looking at your side-by-side photos. You've got some from early competition where even then you like had pretty good shape to your muscles and you're a really good nick. Where was that? Was that your first show or early on in the piece?
Yeah, that would have been probably around my third or fourth show, I'd say. Yeah.
Real good condition there for early on.
Yeah, I was still doing INBA then. Getting lean was sort of never really an issue for me. Mm-hmm. I guess was pretty blessed structurally. Just filling up these pins, man, is my biggest struggle.
Hey, what was it like getting on stage as a 17-year-old? The reason I ask is I was in the gym tonight and there was a 17-year-old guy who's 3 weeks out from the Hawke's Bay show. And I spoke to him and he was real fresh, had a great little physique, and but kind of like he was like a little bit like a possum in the headlights. Yeah, man. He was like, oh, do I look all right? And I'm like, you look fucking great, bro. He kind of didn't, there was a lot he didn't know, obviously, but at that age, you expect it. How did you find it?
I think I loved being amongst it all. And definitely, like, I'm looking at me and I'm like just this little boy compared to, I remember Andrew Murray was there and I was just like, what the heck? So like, obviously definitely not thinking of even comparing, but just totally like just focused on my class and just really focused on just getting started and getting involved in it.
Yep.
Didn't feel out of place or anything. I just sort of felt like the journey was beginning and it was just cool to start learning. Yeah.
Cool, man. Hey, I know Mike's usually the one to ask this, but what's your stats, man? What's your height, your current weight, off-season, on-season? Where are you sort of sitting?
183 centimetres, and I'm sitting at 115 kilos at the moment.
Nice.
Probably around 10%, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be really lean in some areas, but hold a little bit in others.
Yep.
What else is there?
What about stage weight? What do you, cause you did classic last year.
Yeah.
What do you have to get under at 183?
104?
Yeah. 104. Yeah. Yep. So I weighed in, I think.
I'm allowed another 5 kilos.
Yeah. I weighed in at about 97, 98 the day before. And I think I'd got up to about 100 on the day.
Yep.
But,
so you had a little bit of room to move, but probably not a lot for you.
Nah, not a lot. Especially like, I don't think I'd even get close now because I put extra size on my legs and I need to put more size on my legs and far up.
A couple of the photos I saw, you looked like... look more like an open bodybuilder that kind of just needed obviously another 20 kilos to be size of an open body, but you looked at a little bit more like that structure.
Yeah, definitely. I that show I'd done the open as well. I'd done the bodybuilding as well. And even just putting the bodybuilding trunks on I just felt like that was a better fit for me too. We'll just keep pushing that. Yeah.
There's nothing more impressive though than a tall bodybuilder who can fill out that frame. I know it takes a lot longer, but when you're around people like that, like, I mean, I've still got impressions of guys like Hugh Willis and Matt Ashworth and, you know, guys that were in that sort of 6'2 to 6'4 bracket. And
well, you missed me out, bro. You missed me out.
You never weighed 120 on stage, bro. No. You know, when you see those guys, you kind of like, holy heck, you know, that's a big unit. We'll have a look at some photos anyway, but before we do, Guys, if you're not following Frank, you want to follow his journey, Frank_Carroll on Insta. And just quickly, he has got a, having a mozza. He's got a webpage here, frankcarrollprofessionaltrainer.com. So if you want to check out his stuff, we'll have a touch on coaching a bit later. And I'll just try and get back to where I was. I was going to have a bit of a stalk through your photos, bro. Tell you what, man, you're fucking batting above your fucking average there. shout out to Kate. Oh, that's cool, bro. Oh, fuck
it. I reckon it's a fair fight.
Fair fight, you reckon? how long ago was this? Oh, last prep.
Yeah, this was last prep. I think this was just sort of coming in towards peak week.
Yep.
Yeah. Or probably 2 or 3 weeks out. Because actually, I felt like I was looking better here and I should have just maintained that in because my weight was sitting at around about 105 here. Mm. You can see the difference in the fullness and the tightness. And I just got too flat, too empty. And when I get like that, it takes me so long to carb back up.
Yeah, man. I hear you on the too flat thing. It's a real struggle to get that balance between being full and still, you know, being in condition.
Yeah.
That's a cool photo. Who took this photo, bro?
That one there.
Yeah, man.
That's Linda.
Ah, of course it is. Love Linda Shoots. Shout out Linda Shoots. Love her photos. Yeah.
That was that the year before at the after the Tournament of Champs?
Mean. Oh, it's got Linda Shoots on the photo. Should have seen that. Look like you've done a few decent photo shoots here.
Man, so those are just heaps of those are just the iPhone ones.
Here we go.
Now there's one down there of you doing a balancing act on a couple of tubs of protein. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I've always liked to try and have a really holistic approach to my training. And so I try to stay agile and athletic and mobile and able to do all that sort of weird stuff.
I was trying to find this that comparison photo Mike was talking about. Where are we?
That'll be a fair way down.
There was a couple of them side by sides.
Oh, here's an early
one. That's the photo it's from. So that's the one it's from.
Throwback 20 years and 30 kilos.
Yeah. 12 years.
Jeepers, yeah, man. It's quite cool looking at photos like that, eh? And it's just from your own perspective to see how far you've progressed. And Anyway.
Yeah, they're worthwhile having, eh? They're always good to look back on and just.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely, man. Right, Mike, did you want to hit up some questions retraining? Because I know you always want to know.
No, I didn't. Cool. Okay. I don't actually want to. No, I'm over talking about training.
Okay. I'll let you
talk about something else.
You can freeze up then. In that case, I was just going to ask about your approach, whether you're a high volume man or you're a sort of a progressive overload or a low volume, or what's your general approach to training?
I mix it up until it stops working. So I'll focus on one thing, and then when I feel like I plateau, I switch it. I do tend to sort of just plateau really quick in a training phase. So
what's really quick for you? If you're on a training cycle, you start from fresh, how long does it take you before you go, actually, I need to change something up here?
3 to 4 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll feel like for three to four weeks, I'll feel like it's working really well.
Yep.
And then I'll just start to feel flat.
What does working look like? Is it just getting stronger every week?
And then strength is always something that I should have picked powerlifting. Like, that would be easy for me. Mm. I can just keep getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And so I tend not to push too much overload because I want to look after my joints. I want to keep doing this for a long time. And when I was younger coming through, man, I seen people my age now, they were already wrecked.
Yeah.
And, that didn't look like any fun. So I still train with decent weight, but I've spent a lot of time like being able to work up to that weight with keeping a lot of volume and being able to do that with time under tension and stuff as well. But for me, what I like really try to focus on in my training is that I just feel connected. And so sometimes that is going a little bit lighter, pushing a little bit more volume. And then one day that just won't work. And so, you know, I just don't feel it. So I know straight away I've got to change to either a different intensity principle or push for some overload. Yeah.
Just, you're a very high maintenance kind of guy. Lucky lucky you can draw on your own experience as a coach, I guess, to make those changes quite rapidly when you need them.
Yeah, I think, and like, because I'm so focused on my lower end, like, and that's where I focus on my, so as soon as, I mean, I can look at the gym door and my upper body grows, like, it's a pain. And so, like, yeah, with legs, it's, you know, like, I got to stay on them, I've got to train them hard, but just like any muscle group, they get to a point where they get over it, and so, got to change the approach, because you can't just keep.
Yeah.
What are you focusing on your legs when you say you're prioritizing that? Is it, you know, extra workouts? Is it extra volume? Is it around recovery and food around the leg training? What is it that's got to giving you the focus on them?
Yeah, so I'll like the training frequency is always really important for me. I got to stay on them as frequently as I can. I've done day on, day off. I've done like training hamstrings every single day after every workout, as well as on my leg days. But yeah, then with the, like with anything, like I'll just push them really hard. Like I'll work them really hard, whether that's low weight, high volume or low rep and heavy weight stuff. I'm just like, I'll smash them. And so I always put my highest meals around like the night before and the day of. So I start loading for that the day before. And then on my other days, I just sort of like my upper body days are really chill. So I'll pull my calories back on those days just to keep some condition, because I don't want to spill. Like I want to keep my waist tight. I got to 118 at the peak of my bulk just recently and it felt like shit.
That's interesting. Like, you know, you're training that frequently. What is your gauge in terms of recovery that you're ready to go again?
Yeah, that's when I'll change the date. So change that split. So like going from every other day to then feeling like, okay, I'm not feeling it now just because I just haven't even recovered.
Yeah.
So I'll give them a period to recover and I might go every fifth day.
Yep.
And then as soon as I feel like I could do them on a third day again, like they feel all right, then so I won't go every other day, I'll go to every third day. Same thing. At the moment, I'm doing them every fourth day, but doing hamstrings every single day. So, yeah.
Fuck. What's your, have you been measuring progress in terms of you got put a couple inches on there?
Yes. Since September, so since their last show, I thought it was 8, but I've actually put on 10 centimeters around. So,
wow.
We're going pretty well.
Yeah, man.
I could take like even half of that and I'd be fucking over the moon.
Yeah.
I've got the same kind of, I guess, issue in terms of, you know, my legs aren't up to par with my upper body at this point. And they're getting there and they're pretty close. But I'm really concerned about dieting into the show. And my head's kind of saying, let's keep the high carbs on leg day and let's just shave the carbs off in the areas I don't need them. What's your thoughts on that rather than dropping carbs across the board?
Yeah, that's similar to like what I do. Like definitely like need the carbs in there on those other days as well. But it is really just sort of creating a bit of a carb or just a high calorie cycle for around those leg days. So it doesn't have to be just carbs, eh? You just get more food in to fuel it.
It's sort of like saying that, you know, like I want to have a deficit across 6 days, but realistically, you know, on my leg day, I still want to stay in surplus right through to as long as possible. So I don't, because you know that, you know, when you grow your legs, you know, and you're intentionally focusing on them, it's new muscle and kind of new muscle has that tendency to go
easy first. Come, easy go.
Yeah, yep. Easy come, easy go. That's probably a good saying.
Yeah.
It's not that easy come though either.
Sort of an expansion of keeping your food around your workout window too, you know, intro and post, you know, keeping a lot of your calories around there, sort of an expansion of that, keeping it around the priority muscle groups.
Yeah, what I've found recently too is like, because I'm the same, like I try to trim up the calories on those other days, because I don't need them as much on those days, but there's still some days where I wake up that next day and I'm like, man, I feel like my legs still just need more food to help recover from that. So I might do that, and then that's where I might just extend that next leg session out another day and just sort of let my body sort of just chill.
It's almost like, you know, your approach reminds me a lot of when I was powerlifting, there were guys that used, I think it was called reactive training, and they very much monitored it on their performance and how they were feeling in terms of recovery and things like that, and made adjustments. Whereas I think most bodybuilders tend to have a program and stick rigidly to that program. And perhaps, you know, if you have those things built in, to make those small adjustments as and when required, probably quite beneficial. Possibly quite hard if you've got a coach and you're not in contact with your coach on a daily basis. But when you are a coach yourself and you're monitoring your own training, it's probably a little bit easier to do that, you know, on the fly.
Yeah. You still, like, you have to be able to still hold yourself accountable and not let it get away on you, for sure. And like, for most people, it would be you end up just overdoing it, which is what I'm always closer to being guilty of, is just not letting myself get that extra bit of rest. Like, that's probably going to help me more, but I've got better at it. And I think I've always been lucky in that I've always been able to condition really quick. And so I've got good muscular fitness and endurance, and that definitely helps with, I'm fit, and that definitely helps with my recovery. But I got no qualms. Like, if I go jump underneath the bar and I go down and that's not recovered yet, I'll just take an easy one, do something else.
It's probably a little bit easier if you're cycling one muscle group through like that. If you've got as many weak points as I have and you cycle the group, some bits get left out altogether.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gold. Hey, let's hear a bit about your coaching and what you're doing in that space, because I had a bit of a flick through your page, not as much as I would have liked to be fair, but it looked interesting, and you had some interesting commentary there on your kind of thoughts on coaching and your approach.
Yeah, I coach bodybuilding athletes, and I coach lifestyle people, and I've coached people that do Olympic BMX and all sorts of stuff, and all those guys, they're all those other sports, so I'm mostly focusing on their strength training. But I think like most of the lifestyle stuff is pretty, like, it's congruent to bodybuilding training as well. Like, they want to get toned. they want to look good. So it's sort of all part in the same, but I think I've just, you know, I've learned methods that and principles that I've had the opportunity to try for myself as well and find that they work. And so, yeah, I like to run a lot of time under tension. And I like to cycle that over a few weeks. I'll sort of do normally with clients, depending on where they are at when they start as well. But I find like even that's a really good way to start a beginner, because you're getting them to really take their time and go through movements properly.
Yep.
They're not going to be able to jump weight up, because it's hard when you're doing a 5-second eccentric.
You know that your clients fucking hate you for 5-second eccentrics.
Oh yeah.
I did them today on the hack squat. They were only 4-second ones, and every time I did them, I'd look at my training partner and go, "Fuck, I hate you, coach. I fucking hate you." But you're right. You know, it doesn't allow for. You know, you've got to be a lot tighter with your form, and
it is what it is. Prevents a lot of injury as well, saves a lot of joint wear, because you're just not, you know, you've got to leave your ego at the door, and you're getting the most out of the least, which is sort of like how I like to approach everything.
Yeah.
And then step it up. But normally, like, I'll sort of do that for 6 to 9 weeks. Some people, after they've done 2 rounds of that, they're like, "Oh, no, give me something different." Some people can go for 12, they start loving it. Heaps people start like that, and then no matter what other plan I put them on, they still keep the eccentrics in, because it just feels good. But normally like 6 to 9 weeks, and then I'll switch it up, give them a bit of like a deload and just a sort of like a fun high volume stuff, get some, you know, pumps happening.
Yeah.
And everyone likes that. And then might step into some strength based stuff after that, then go back to And then I can like hybrid it up as well and mix up some sort of like high volume with time under tension. And
so essentially you're taking, you know, probably clients that don't have a lot of knowledge around training, putting them through training that kind of forces them to learn a lot more about training, and then being able to have a wider range of tools to work with them on, really.
Yeah, I think there's heaps of people that think they know a lot about training until they actually start training too. Yeah. And so, but like, yeah, I feel like it's fail safe. Yeah. And it works, like it produces the results. And yeah.
And you've got any clients coming up going on stage in the next little while?
I think I've got 25 competing this year.
Holy shit.
It's a lot of bikini girls.
Yep.
And a few guys. I had Nigel do the show that just happened.
Yep.
He's a master's men's physique. Mm-hmm. And he'd done that. And so he's just started his prep again for nationals.
Cool.
But I got a few other young guys as well doing men's physique and just heaps of bikini girls this year though.
Yeah. I've noticed over here at the moment, it's all men's physique. All the guys are all doing men's physique, and it's just like, it'd be nice to see some bodybuilders, but hey, man, you know, it's a good, you know, I mean, these guys are admittedly, you know, 19 to 23 years old. So potentially some of them will be, you know, bodybuilders in the future, but men's physique seems to be where the numbers are at the moment. So
yeah, it's just, it's so much more attainable. Like the tangibility of it, you know, you can get it sooner, eh?
Yeah.
And it's all like it. That's not saying it's not competitive, because it is. Oh. I mean, like the standard there's high, but definitely for a younger person coming through, I probably would have done it if that was an option when I first started.
I don't know, because it wasn't around then. And for me, like, you know, I was competing in powerlifting, but there's no way I was going to get on a bodybuilding stage. I think I got on stage when I was 23. And even I felt like I was fucking, you know, light years behind everyone else. But I think if there was men's physique, probably would have got me on stage earlier. But like you say, you know, people, it is more attainable.
If you're motivated.
But the numbers are really high, so it is really, really competitive, you know. Sorry, Mike, what was that?
If your motivation is to look good for the ladies, then there's the cost-benefit analysis for smashing your legs to bits. It's not really there, eh? You just pop up the guns and reach, and so it's got to be the first port of call, you know. And if you fall in love with it, then you kind of, I've got to get some pins as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely do. Like when it didn't exist, you didn't even think about it, and so you just went straight in it. Like, so me at 17 years old, I wanted to be Arnie, and so that was what I went for. Whereas if I had have seen, I don't know, somebody else, I might have changed my mind, but probably not. I think you know what you're into, and I think it is just, it's a good stepping stone for some people.
I actually enjoy it a lot more now than when it first came out. I do struggle both in bikini and men's physique because of the sheer numbers of people on stage. But when you look at the sort of top end of them, you know, they are very, very competitive athletes. And I, you know, when it first came out, I didn't really see that. Now that I've, you know, talked to a few people like that, gone to a few more shows in recent time and seen the standard at where it is, you know, I actually pay a bit more attention, I think. So, yeah.
I've really warmed to it too. But one thing I do hate, and the same with bodybuilding, is bad posing. You get bad posing in men's physique or bad posing in bikini. It's just, it's very off-putting. You know, it looks so awkward, and you know, whereas good posing looks fantastic. The way their poses are obviously different than bodybuilding poses. They look fantastic when they're done well, good athletes doing them well, but when they're not done well, they can look really awkward. You know, I suppose similar to bodybuilding as well, but you're more so when it's a bikini girl that looks awkward trying to.
Yeah, I think if you're Paul Dillette's size and you look a bit gumby, you kind of get away with it. But you know, when you're, you know, probably in a class that it is very much focused on the aesthetics and the presentation, probably a bit different, eh? You know, different to throwing shaved gorillas on stage, and we kind of
it's just I think people overlook the importance of it, and I mean, if they don't know, but I know we've got, between Kate and I, like, we we offer the whole package. Mm-hmm. And like, I've definitely got clients that pose with other people because it's convenient for them and it's all good, but we push on them the importance. So even if it is just your first show, we want you at a high standard. So you go up there confident as well and you enjoy the whole experience better. Yep. And you get better photos and yeah.
I think that's critical, eh, for first show, because like, you know, if you went in and had a really shit first show, the chances of you repeating that process are probably pretty low, unless you're one of those people that like, I'm going to show you now, I'm going to come back. And, you know, and I guess, you know, fortunately, probably for me, I had that attitude. But, you know, that said, even though I didn't do as well as I wanted to, I actually really enjoyed the show when I did it.
Yeah.
But I think if you went up there and you weren't ready for it, or your posing was all over the show, you'd just kind of walk away and go, fuck that, I don't ever want to do that again.
Yeah, knock your confidence big time. You know when you go up there if you're ready or not, and you know part of that's whether you know how to pose or not.
Yeah, yeah. And like you say, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for most people doing their first show, at a very minimum, they should at least have someone looking at them going, am I ready to go on that show? Because if they're not, don't do the show, because it's going to be a bad experience. And B, you know, make sure they at least know the mandatory poses and look, you know.
2 months out. Know the mandatory pretty well 2 months out, so they at least
I feel like
3 days from the show.
Even if you're the coach and you're not, you know, you're not posing them for coaching, it should be your responsibility to say, hey, go get some posing coaching.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day too, like, the better they present themselves, the better they reflect your work as well.
Yep. And look, I thought about that earlier today. I was talking to a guy who did his first lot of posing, and I said to him, look, I'm going to go get some posing coaching. You know, I'm up to my 12th show, but unless I can pose to the optimum I can pose, I'm not showing my hard work. You know, I'm not showing a year and a half of off season and, you know, 20 weeks worth of diet because you know, my lat's not popping, or my arms aren't far enough back, or whatever it might be. You know, my legs are soft, you know. So I think, you know, that's probably good advice for anyone, whatever stage in their bodybuilding career that they are, be it newbie or veteran semi-retired like myself.
Yeah. I think it even helps your training, like with your intention and your application, and when you do certain exercises and stuff, and you know, you feel that contraction the way that you should feel, or that flexion as you're in that pose as well, and you can sort of simulate and think that it helps with that mind-muscle connection, sort of like goes to and fro.
Yeah. And that can be really hard. Like, you know, I was saying to Mike, the thing I was telling him the other day, that, you know, like probably 4 or 5 months ago was the first time I could truly say I had a connection with my lat. I mean, I've trained my lats for 30 something years, and then, you know, I guess I took the time to kind of really back the weight down and just work on it, but like I could actually feel it and actually felt like doing a lat spread when I was doing something, or feeling, you know, and it was unusual. And I thought, how much better would I have been through the back if I'd learned that 20 years ago?
Yeah.
If only I knew then what I knew now. That's the catch. That's right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Always learning, though, eh? Always learning. Yeah. Right. Hey, we are going to come to a wrap, but before we do, I really want to thank you for coming on board and appreciate the last minute. And I was late. Man, I didn't know if I was going to make it back driving, and it was like Millennium Falcon hit hyperspace in the rain, and there was a washout on the road. I'm like, fuck, I'm a country hick. But yes, I really appreciate you coming on and at reasonably short notice. But wanted to have you on from quite some time ago. I remember way back when you bought a t-shirt off me, and I was like, fuck, got to get him on. But we always allow our people to say a bit of a shout out to their people that have supported them. So, you know, the floor is yours, Frank.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for bringing me on as well. Appreciate it. And man, thank you to all my clients, because I couldn't be who I am without them. Mo, Shane, and just everyone else in the Federation. Like, it is a real, and you know, inside our IFBB fam, it is that. And thanks to all of them.
Yeah. Who else, bro? Who else?
Kate.
I never let our boys that have got partners forget that one, just in case. Shout out to Kate, and we will need to talk to you at some stage, Sue, too. From us, South Pacific Muscle, have a great week, guys. Stay safe out there. Have a real productive one in the gym, and we'll see you all on stage or around those comps pretty soon.
Cool.